They want the bulk of the percentage on the wins in the account to be theirs. So they're less willing to network with smart people who can, or they'll try and beat those markets themselves and maybe they'll be successful. More often than not, they're probably not, but.
Hey, what's up, everybody? GP13 here, joined by a very special guest, Mark, aka China Maniac. I'm sure you've read some of his amazing long form posts on Twitter recently. Been awesome to read, and happy to have you on the show.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be here, and looking forward to a good conversation.
Reading your long form, I kind of got a good glimpse into how you came to sports betting, which is similar to how I came, which is through like serious or professional poker. Sure. And I've been excited to talk to you because you're the first person that I've had on that we could kind of talk about how poker's colored our process for sports betting, our perception on professional gambling. But if you want to just give everybody a brief run through of your career, because I think it's really interesting and important to know for your current process and where you're at now.
Sure. So as far as my gambling, professional gambling career, I would say I broke through at a late age, I think, for somebody that does this. I broke through it like 32 as a heads up, actually a limit hold'em player. And then I started playing heads up limit hold'em. I did that all the way up until about 2019. But as the years went on from 2016 up until today, the sports betting came in around 2015, 2016. And then just the volume and the bet sizes increased through the years to where at the pandemic, I transferred 100% completely into sports betting right after the pandemic. Well, after the first 6 months of the pandemic.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people from our industry have made that shift and made it around pandemic time. Like myself was, I made it like slightly before the pandemic, but you know, I followed the path of plenty of poker players who made the jump. And I'm curious to talk a little bit about poker and what are the transferables and where you think you're really strong in sports betting specifically because of your poker background?
Oh yeah. So I think the biggest skill for me is, you know, in poker, the best skill that I developed over the years was game selection, how to get in a good game. What is a good poker game? What seats are the best seats? And
yes,
who at the table am I hunting and when are the games going bad? So, for instance, if I'm going to go play the highest stakes in the world in a limit hold'em game and there are 8 world-class players there, I have no edge, no value. Whereas the same as if I opened up a sports book and I want to bet on a random NBA game, it's going to be very difficult to come up with who the winner is unless you have a process that's refined and you have all that information down. So my best skill that was transferable was knowing what is good and what is not good. And when I started originating player props, it became very easy to tell what was good and what was not good. It was going to be easier to figure out whether Juju Smith-Schuster is going to have over or under 7.5 catches versus who's going to cover a spread in an NBA or an NFL game.
So spot on. And we were talking about just briefly before the call, and I was saying like game selection is, I think poker players are so, or when you play poker to pay the rent, game selection is just drilled into you because there's no, like, you're not in it for ego anymore, which is, oh, you sit down with the 8 world champions and you want to be, you know, the best in the world or whatever. It's like, you're doing this to pay the bills, and the most efficient way to pay the bills is pick the right games. It's like the leverage on picking the right games is so much higher than the leverage on, you know, being 1% better at poker. And I find like that that applies so much to sports betting. And when people might be like, well, I don't know, would you call it like barking up the wrong tree almost?
Sure. Yeah. You know. Yeah. A lot of people, yeah, a lot of people, I think, want to get, it's almost like some people want to get into a pissing contest to prove that they're the best. And that's fine. I mean, but there's only maybe a handful of guys like that that could sit down at any poker game, like a Phil Galfond, somebody like that. Yeah, he can sit down and probably play in a ring lineup versus, you know, whoever, and he's probably going to win. But for the common, average, everyday guy, you're just not going to be able to do that. And it's the same thing with betting major market sports. There's, I don't know, a handful of people that maybe originate that stuff that crush it. And, you know, and then there's other, you know, there might be other guys that try to do it just off pure ego or thinking they can. And it's just not a very easy thing to do.
And it might not even, well, this is in poker. I always found this, right? It's a debate, like who's the best poker player. And when we were, you know, I think I was a little later to poker than you, but you know, when I was playing, when it first started, is like unanimous, Phil Ivey's the best player, right? Because X, Y, Z. And later it became a little more, I feel like, nuanced, because some people were like, the person who makes the most money is the best player. No, the person who, you know, no one wants to sit against is the best player. The, you know, the person who can win the toughest lineups is the best player. And like, right. I started skewing towards eventually just like, okay, whoever makes the most money is the best player. If you find the good private games, if sure. you know, network, that's a skill. You know, there's more skills than just being the best. I don't know like sure. where you would fall in that, or how you think about that question.
Well, I think that there's two answers here. I think like you could argue that Dan Bilzerian is the best gambling mm-hmm. poker player. He may not be the best poker player, but as a gambler and extracting value from, you know, whales or whatever, if he and I believe the numbers he's put out there, that he's won $50 to $100 million off of, you know, rich Hollywood guys, whatever. I mean, you could make that argument. But then you could also make the argument that, you know, like I said, like maybe someone, I'll just throw in like Phil Galfond, like maybe yep. it's him. Maybe it's, you know, there's somebody like that. Or back in the day, it for sure was Phil Ivey for a little while. But yeah, it's kind of two different things. You know, and you could kind of correlate that to sports where, and I'll just throw a couple of like big names out there, like Spanky, maybe, I mean, possibly has the biggest operation out there and the mm-hmm. most successful, but, and you know, and it's great what he does and whatever, maybe he's the biggest winner, but I think there's a difference between the best sports bettor and the biggest winner. I think it's kind of two things, but it's like, you know, whatever, it's either way, they're very successful.
Right. And this is kind of, I think about this because you said Dan Bilzerian might be the best gambler poker player. And I often, you know, when I hear you talk, when I read your long form stuff, I don't even necessarily immediately think sports bettor. I think advantage player or gambler. Do you see yourself as a sports bettor or do you see yourself as like an AP?
I'd say a little of both. I mean, I guess it's all gambling in the end. And yeah, I'm trying to just, of course, it's advantage play. I'm trying to find weak spots that I excel at to extract value from the other side of the counter. And if I can't do that, then I've tried to network and meet other guys who can. And I'll just let them do the work if I can't do it. Or if I can't beat an account, then I just give it to somebody else. So, you know, it's a little bit of both. So I guess like that's advantage play 101 right there. If they don't let you in the door, then you got to have somebody else go in the door for you. And you're just taking advantage by playing a certain way.
Definitely. And game selecting too. Like I sometimes think about switching from poker to sports betting and my friends who've done it and you know, you've done it where it's like, isn't that just game selecting at the end of the day? Like the upsides, I don't like if someone was like, oh, I want to make a lot of money gambling in 2024, I wouldn't tell them to go play poker. But if they told me that in 2010 or 2009, yeah, you know, I'd be like, go play poker, learn poker. So it's like, sure, isn't it just game selecting and the overall career of an AP that like you're here now and who knows where we'll be in 5-10 years?
Sure. It's games. It's certainly game selection, but it's a matter of having the liquidity in the games as well. And that's like part of the reason why I got out. Like if I was living in LA, I maybe don't get into sports betting. There's big limit hold'em games there. And I believe like the biggest games out in LA, I could probably play in those games in public casinos. And I believe I could beat them and beat them for a high hourly. But, you know, that is not in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New England, where I'm from, even at like at Connecticut, at Foxwoods, Mohegan, all these places, those games didn't exist online. Like I caught the tail end of the best limit games that were still available, where the hourly was good, but it just didn't have the high end, you know, expectation that you can have now in sports betting with the legalization and it being a little bit easier to get down, I would say, than 5 years ago. You know, always run into things, problems here and there, but it's certainly not too hard to get bets down nowadays with all the states coming in.
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty good environment for it. Yeah, yes, definitely. So when I'm thinking about, let's go through your transition from poker to sports betting first, sure, and then we can kind of go into more of the strategy. But you know, I think one thing that at least I found coming from poker to sports betting was you started with a few advantages, decent network. You thought about EV properly and, you know, people had accounts, whether it's you knew 20 people on Bovada who had like, you know, Bet Online or Bovada accounts or whatever, you know, you were kind of starting off on a solid foot. Was that your experience?
Yes. I certainly had an advantage in that fact that just purely from playing poker, I knew a lot of these sites. I played poker on a lot of these sites. And I also had friends that were professional poker players that also dabbled in sports. So like I knew what was good, what wasn't good, where I could bet, where I couldn't bet. And there you go.
And then I was going to say, like, what was the original strategy? I think on Circles Off, you mentioned that you were, you know, waiting in some lobbies in poker and just started clicking around. What was it, college football props?
Yes. It was 2015 or 2016. I think it was, and I mentioned Juju Smith earlier because that's the earliest prop. That's the earliest prop that I remember betting. It was like week one or week two of a college football season. I had Bovada open. I was sitting in the lobby. There was no action. It was Saturday at 10, 11, 12 o'clock. I was probably sitting on mergesportsbook.ag. And I just, one of my friends was into, we're all very big college football fans. And he had been telling me how easy props were. And I just kind of let it go in one ear and out one ear for years because I just didn't really need to get into it. Poker was fine for me. And I really didn't have the time to get into it. I'd tried to bet sports before, always unsuccessful, more of a degenerate gambler before I became a professional poker player. So like, it was just something I didn't want to get into. But one day I just opened up the college player prop lobby and I looked down the list and I'm just looking at the numbers and they just look too high. So I immediately just was like, wait, this doesn't look right. I would open up, just ESPN.com, type in the guy's name, look at his game logs from the prior year and the week before. And I'm just looking at this and I'm like, wait a second. So they're setting the number here and this guy's gone under 85% of the games he's played the last 2 years as the number one receiver of the last year. So I just figured, well, betting the under is probably a good bet here. And then I just went down the entire list and they all looked the same. And, you know, one thing that Rob did ask me on Circles Off that I don't think I gave a great answer to was, like, why me? Like, well, how did I get into that and beat all these other people that were, you know, there's other professional sports bettors out there. And I think I've since written about this. And One thing is with college football, and back then before the legalization of sports, now they put all these spreads out on a Tuesday. By the time Saturday morning comes, whether it's NFL, college football, whatever, that stuff's chopped up. The lines are pretty sharp by the end of the week on Saturday. But back then, you know, you have a guy sitting on an island in Costa Rica or whatever, and his job is probably to go in there and just he's got to make the lines for the top 25 games, and he probably, you know, he shows up to the office with a coffee. I just imagine this is the process. And he just takes the average, maybe bumps it up a little bit because he knows they're getting over bets. And then you have a guy like me who is waiting at his computer for those lines to populate so I can handicap them. And then when those get transferred from offshore, Bovada, the PPHs like LV Action, whatever, they start copying. I know when those are going to come, and it just happens so fast. You have to do this within an hour or 2 hours. They put them out at 10. They used to put them out at 10 a.m. The game kicks off at 12. There's a 2 hour window. So like, I was just there. I showed up and I just repeatedly did it until, you know, and I just kept doing it and doing it, finding out what mistakes I was making, refine my process. And then eventually your volume just goes up and your bet size goes up. And it was that simple.
And it's like, but it was a level of dedication, consistency, professionalism that is difficult for a lot of people. And I know that one of my favorite articles or, you know, long form Twitter posts you wrote was your poker journey, basically. But the part that I liked the most when it was like, this is how you transition from winner or from like, I needed to make money. I needed to get my shit together, make some money.
Sure.
And it was like, it wasn't like, oh, I need to, you know, I need to probe turn more and I need to, you know, check fold less. And I need to, that wasn't the list. The list was like exercise, you know, sleep, eat good. Yeah. Like, and it was that decision. Like, I'm just going to be a pro at this. I'm going to do this right.
Right.
And I often tell people that and they're like, okay, yeah, but who do I bet on? I'm like, it's so easy to win. If you really want to win, you'll win, but you have to, you know, it's actually just that switch. Like, and I don't know, like, is that, I loved reading about that. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about your opinion. I have the list here, actually, if you mind if I read the list.
Go ahead.
This is the China Maniac list to being a pro. Get some exercise, challenge negative thoughts, regularly eat wholesome foods, get adequate sleep, drink plenty of water, make a change in routine, get a routine, laughter. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's simple. That all happened after a period of time where I think I won like, I don't know how much it was. I wrote in the post. It was like 60K or something. I won in like a month. And I was riding high. And I think I was getting staked at the time because I'd run my bankroll down before. I think I paid my backer off his cut. And then I went on my own. And then I think I lost 60K like that right in a row the next month. And I just couldn't win for 30 days. I was playing horrible. I was playing horrible poker probably when I won the 60K. I just came up. There were all these bad habits that I was getting into. And then the next month was the month after the World Series of Poker ended. And a lot of those, you know, sharp limit hold'em players are online when they come home from the World Series of Poker. They're grinding the same games as me. Now my bad tendencies, they're taking advantage of. And I went into a depression for, I don't know, it might have been up to a week. I can't remember what it was. But I remember laying in bed some days for like 18 hours. Like, oh, when is this going to end? Like, what's going to happen? Eventually, you know, all that stuff you just read off, all I did was I went on Google and just Googled like, how do I get out of a depression? And mm-hmm. I took that list and I followed it. And from that day forward, and it's been pretty much every day since then, you got to show up every day and you got to be in the right frame of mind. If you're not, there's other killers out there that are either working harder than you or they're working just as hard as you. And if you're not on your A game more often than not, then you're going to get crushed, whether it's poker or sports betting. And that one lesson really, you know, that really helped me a lot. I probably could do a lot better with the exercise and the the eating the wholesome food. But like, if you do enough of the stuff on that list, the majority of it, and then focus on what you actually have to do with the actual work, then the results should take care of themselves.
I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. And I had a similar like revelation myself, and this was all part of it. And I cut alcohol on top of it. And it was such like it made me show up every day because I was just consistent as could be. And then eventually you're like, wow, this isn't that hard actually. Like it's, as long as you're there every day. And I know people in gambling or in poker sometimes will be like, you know, take breaks, you know, and whatnot. But I always thought the people who were the best were the people who just didn't take breaks. If they took a break, they went on vacation. Right. But it was like they were there every day. They played poorly. Right. Okay, they're there the next day. They're a pro. I always looked up to that, those people. And I've never been huge on the like be really quick to take a break if you're feeling sure. down because it's gambling, you know. That
right.
it's that happens.
Yeah. As long as your head's on straight and you know you're making all the correct decisions and it's not like really negatively affecting your mind or whatever, then yeah, that's how I am. When I'm like when I feel like I'm a well-oiled machine, I don't take breaks. I just keep going, going, going. That was like the one instance since 2009 where I like really had to take a deep look in the mirror on like, is this for me? Am I going to be able to continue doing this? Like, you know, I had to make a change. It was the lowest point of my gambling career by far. And, fortunately, you know, it turned around. I happened to find a good piece of information that like catapulted my poker game to like a level that it needed to be at where it wasn't, because I was kind of playing on autopilot for a while, just clicking buttons. And, yeah, it really worked.
For sure. And the autopilot is so common in poker. Do you mm-hmm. think there's I think every serious poker player struggles with staying off autopilot because you learn so much. You could autopilot and be like pretty good, but it might not be good enough. Is there like an equivalent in sports betting, you think?
Yeah, I think there is. So like going on autopilot in poker is kind of when you're just clicking buttons. You're not really thinking through the decision. And even if you are, maybe you don't have the right strategy. And I would say the equivalent in sports betting would be, let's say you model props or something like that. And mm-hmm. None of my stuff's automated. I do it all by hand, player by player. And I think going on autopilot in sports betting would be where when your edge is eroding, if your edge mm-hmm. is eroding a little bit, maybe you're using the same process to model out your props. You're still betting them, but maybe you don't realize that the edge is gone and you don't have a way to quantify it. So, you know, and I ran into a couple of spots like that last year, which got corrected because I have a partner who I have look over a lot of my work. And, you know, he pointed a couple of things out to me and they made sense. And, you know, like I could see how somebody who originates that has no way to quantify that could, you know, you could just keep betting the same stuff over and over. And then maybe you're winning 60% of your props. And then all of a sudden you're winning 52% of your props. You're laying 120, 125 on average. Now you're losing on some of those. And, you know, and maybe you don't know why. And if you keep doing it, then, you know, you're not making money anymore.
And if you're doing this by hand, are you saying that you have your partner looks over and that's like the most helpful or most efficient way to
yes.
double check if you've lost your edge because you're not 100% sure if you have based on like your process?
Yeah, I think for me and myself – and one of my partners who we go over a lot of this stuff together for football props. And if he sees something that I don't, because I'm doing the bulk of the handicapping, I'm doing mm-hmm. all the X's and O's, all the numbers, he's doing his own work too. But I would say, you know, if we have 100% worth of plays, 80% of them come from me, maybe 20% of them come from him. A lot of the 80% that I give him, he would come up with anyways. But some of the stuff that I come up with, for me, for him to look at it, he's able to maybe look at some things that I missed throughout the week, whether it be news or matchups, something that I missed. And he'll be able to tell me, no, like that is definitely not a good under 69 and a half for this running back for reasons X, Y, and Z. And then maybe when he points that out to me, I might be like, oh, wow, how did I miss that? I've been in a tunnel for the last 3 weeks, handicapping hundreds, thousands of props by hand, you know, just running the math on a calculator. And how did I miss that? And without someone like that, you know, you could go on and, you know, maybe you're winning, but you would win a lot more if you could cut out some of the mistakes like that.
And, you know, it's funny. It's like, I'm sure you hear this a lot, like being, like less automated, but it's like, you know, people who are running their processes automated, they're doing the same thing. And if they're lucky, they have two good models, you know, that they're either combining or they're using to check, you know, check each other. Like that's a dream. And that's what you have there. It's like not different, you know, yeah. It's like all, it's the same stuff. And I think like the people who are really good originators who do automated stuff, they would say like, yeah, that's basically what the model does. You know,
right.
That's it right there. You know, it's right. Not, it's, it doesn't, there's, I don't know, like I find sometimes people think it's like this black box, but it's really just kind of that process. And we can kind of get into it, I guess, a little more because, you know, I'd love to hear, because you wrote another great, I think it's your most recent piece was simple sports math models for knuckleheads. Right.
Right.
And we were talking before the show about how you were listening to the JFAR podcast and right. how, you know, the way he was describing his process with, you know, keeping track of the baseball lines was similar to what you do for football. And on top of that, someone listening could learn just from listening, oh, okay, this is something I can do. Whereas if you listen to somebody whose process is incredibly automated, that you listen to them, you're like, wow, that's really smart. You might pick up one thing, but you can't be like, oh, this is how I can go attack this today. So that you wrote, the process you wrote down, the simple sports math models for knuckleheads,
sure.
is something people can read and use today. So I'd love for you to kind of walk through that and kind of how you approach your process.
Sure. So like, if you have something automated in like somebody like Rufus, something that like Rufus has, you know, arguably the best golf bettor in the world, you know, probably the best Super Bowl prop guy of all time. If you have something like that, that is a dream. It's great. You know, it takes a genius and one hell of a smart guy to come up with, you know, whatever systems and whatever in place that somebody like he has. But for, I think the majority of the people that are going to really try and win at sports betting that don't have those skills to do something that, you know, one of these super geniuses have, then like the post that I wrote about the, you know, the simple math models for knuckleheads, like it can't get much more ABC than that. It's just simple math, division, what has happened, how many games, like how do you price a safety? Like, some people, that might be like something difficult for somebody to figure out, but like, you know, I put some really simple examples in there and didn't really get too detailed, but you know, you could take that stuff and take that, you know, simple math and be able to model a lot of game props or player props even just based on past performance or, you know, large samples of data that have, you know, that have happened through the season. You want to price a pick six for the Super Bowl? I mean, you go to sportsreference.com with two clicks and you can have every pick six there for this year, the year before, the year before, the year before. Add it all up, divide it, see how many times it's happened. Look at the quarterbacks that are playing. How many pick sixes do they throw? You know, whatever. And you can make your own number very simply. Now, it's not automated, but then again, if you're doing Super Bowl props, you could get a lot of money down. So, you know, maybe, you know, price that stuff out and you can make a little bit of money.
Yeah. So it's like your process is kind of like, okay, we're going to see A, what's just team agnostic average for this. And then you're like, okay, we look at who's playing and now we can adjust it. And, you know, I know you talked about in one of your other posts, you had some weather angles that you felt like were really solid with totals, I think it was. And it's just like, you know, adding those layers on, right, of common sense, logic, knowing the baselines, and then feeling comfortable with your ability to like adjust off the baseline.
Sure. Yes. As far as like the, you know, like the weather stuff goes, like the Browns have had a couple of games with some severe weather, wind, with the wind coming off those lakes, the same thing with Buffalo. You know, those type of games, just you let the facts speak for themselves in those type of games. No, I read a stat once when there's, I think it's a certain weather temperature with 25 mile per hour winds. I can't remember if the precipitation was involved, but no quarterback has ever had 20 fantasy points in a game with like that type of weather. Now, mm-hmm. that's as simple as knowing, okay, that's two touchdown passes, which is mm-hmm. 6 points each, and that's 200 right. yards. So something simple like that, like I had somebody tell me a long time ago, 20 mile per hour winds or more, and that's like the gold standard. Now, I've come up with something else, which I'm not going to get too detailed. Fair. I'm not going to get like too detailed into it, but if you track the weather for every single game and you just kind of look at, break the stats down, what happened with specific weather, then you could get to a point where you get a game that comes up like that Buffalo New England game where Mac Jones attempted, what did he attempt? Two passes in the game.
Yep.
And you know, stuff like that. And, I remember tweeting with Pizzola during that game. Like I tweeted something like he was tweeting something about how the models are going to get thrown off because of this weather, because you could only pass one way or you could only run, and they weren't adjusting the correct odds based on where the wind was going for a live betting mm-hmm. in the game. Mm-hmm. So like an angle like that, when there's weather like that, like you could theoretically come up with like each quarter, like either the over, the under mm-hmm. or team specific, whatever.
Because just of based which, off the, like flipping sides and
yeah, like maybe where you the can't, wind, yeah. maybe you can only run the ball from one way. You just cannot throw the mm-hmm. ball. And that was kind of the situation with Mac Jones. I mean, they didn't want to throw it with him anyways, but when Buffalo was going one way on the field, they couldn't throw. The majority, I'm pretty sure, of like Josh Allen's passing yards were going one way, not the other way.
That's significant, right? Because Josh, I'm not a football better, but Josh Allen throws a lot and has, right? He can wheel and deal, yeah.
Sure.
So do you bet live then a lot? Like it seems like with your skill set, that would be just like right up your alley.
No, I don't do a lot of live betting. I have a guy that I work with that does do live betting and he's incredible, but I don't touch that stuff. But that I'm just saying that's like an angle you could look at in a weather game like this where, you know, the sports books aren't accounting for the wind, the precipitation, or how cold it is or whatever. Their model's spitting out whatever, and their model probably isn't taking into account that when this team gets the ball going one way, they're not going to be able to throw the ball. So that's just another angle on top of that. But like, as far as like, you know, the props go, like, yeah, you could hit a home run on games like that. They've done a lot better job pricing those games in the recent years, but there was a window of about 4 or 5 years where when these games come up, you could, I don't know, you could put in 35 bets and go 33-2 and then spread them out, you know, over many sports books. You know, mm-hmm. 33-2 laying one, even you can lay 200. Lay 1,000. It doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't throw, you can't throw.
If you can't throw, you can't throw. And but two things you said there make me think poker. It's like, one, what are the sportsbook's models? How do they operate? What are they spitting out? And it's like, okay, they're not accounting for these extreme situations, or when you know the Browns played those games or Buffalo played those games, they're just throwing those into the average when they need to be adjusted because the wind was, you know, coming strong off those lakes or whatever it is. And then the second thing you said, because I think a lot of people, when they found this angle, would throw 35 bets onto one sports book, you know, you made sure to spread out, because if you send a sports book a ticket of 35 unders, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but if you send five here, four there, you know, I'm assuming you're doing that to not trip any alarms if you don't have to, right? So you're thinking about the book, right?
Actually, no. When I would do this, my motto is the same as the Cobra Kai: strike first, strike hard, no mercy. I would just lay it all. I mean, I've had a couple of guys that would send me messages like PPH bookies or whatever. They'd text me before the game, just be like, "Hey, I deleted all those plays." But then maybe I got them into 10 other books and there's just no questions. And if I get kicked off after those bets win, so be it. You just got to go out and find more accounts. That's it. It's that simple.
It's like the blackjack. That's like the blackjack players. You know, they're just like, look, I'm not going to try and, you know, hit or like stand on 16s when I don't need to, and like not buy insurance to play coverage. I'm going to go and get the money and make them kick me out, right?
Right. The only way, like, I might not do that, and it would be maybe this angle or like many other angles, is if you have a book, like a PPH book specifically, that's paying you out consistently for a year, 2 years, 3 years, then maybe you don't play an angle like this, because maybe that does trip the alarm. And if they're going to keep paying you year after year until eventually, you know, you just want to keep taking that gravy until it runs out. So, you know.
And I mean, I think that this gets into an interesting conversation on strategy and like longevity, because everybody's having this conversation. There's so many people right now on Twitter that are top down, you know, you read all, or you see all the odds jam, like, click my link stuff. And, you know, the account's health has been getting worse and worse. Have you found that what you're doing, you're taking unique angles, and like, therefore you're able to get some just inherently extra longevity? Or did you even ever try top down, or was it just all bottom up? Like, and you haven't really tested the markets on the other side.
I haven't really needed to. I mean, I'm not against top down. I enjoy bottoms up. I think it's fun. I love originating props. I love originating props. And then I love the satisfaction of being right and knowing that I was right. Like, that's one thing. I mean, there could be instances, maybe you make more top down, but every situation is different. Like, trying to think here. The bottoms up is just better for me. But I've done some top down stuff with golf, and mm-hmm. that stuff worked. It worked pretty easily. I found some stuff in the market that would be applicable to betting golf matchups. I was very successful with it, and I just stopped betting it. I don't know. I probably still should bet it, but I just stopped because I don't know. I don't like getting up on Tuesday mornings and being at my computer or whatever, you know, like
you, tail a specific golf sports book.
No, not a specific golf sports book. It's just,
okay.
When
you don't have market, to disclose it.
No, just so when the market starts moving around when those matchups come out on Tuesday, there's stuff out there that is very simple that led me from one place to another that became very, it became profitable and
yeah.
Whatever. It's I don't want to get too into it because I'm probably going to tap back into it at some point, but it's just, that's the really the only top down. Other than that, like, if there's books that I can't beat or there's access to places that I have that I can't beat, I'll just bring in other handicappers or other groups that specialize in those places, And yeah, maybe they're doing top down. I'm totally cool with that. Like a dollar is a dollar. So
yep.
I just try to be smart about, you know, what can I beat? What can I beat? And how much time should I use, you know, trying to beat certain markets versus handing accounts off and just having other people beat them. So
yeah. I think it's a good mindset to have to protect yourself from taking big losses. Like what can I beat? What can I beat? What can and what can't? When do I hand it off to somebody? Because I think people listening to this who don't want to, you know, go through a machine learning class and learn computer programming are going to be very attracted to your style of betting. But sure. I'd love for you to like speak to them on potential pitfalls of, you know, protecting themselves from the downside. You know, always, you know, protect yourself from going broke. Like where are the pitfalls for people who want to try this strategy coming from maybe a top down and want to try originating props without programming?
All right. So what advice would I give somebody? I would say, you know, you maybe just come up with some type of process and just track the stuff. And if you want to bet it, maybe bet it smaller. And as you gather more intel on whether you're winning or losing with this process, you raise the bet size. That's pretty much it. Like I was just fortunate that when I started, like I said, the first month or two of originating props, like I was winning like, I don't know, 70%, 75%. It's just crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Like never did it before, just 75%, but that's how soft the lines were. Eventually, you know, you run into some walls. My win rate maybe dropped to the low 60s then. Figured that out. Now you're back up. And, you know, and you just need to be able to adjust on the fly over time and try and detect, like, what has changed in why, you know, why is your win rate going down? Why are these plays – are there reasons why these plays are losing? You know, can you quantify why? Like, for years for me – I never really had to do that because it was just consistent winning. But I would say the last couple of years, it's gotten a lot more difficult. So I would just say don't just come out and fire because you think you got something. Maybe backtest it a little bit, track it. And if you're going to bet it small. And then when you know you have that edge, you just fire a little bit bigger. That's it.
I agree. I always tell people bootstrap your sports betting. It's great. It's like, you can start maybe a smaller market or something, you know, that's niche. See a couple go through the hoop, right? Oh, okay. Like I'm onto something or I'm not onto something. Rework.
Right.
But bet small, bet an easy market. And then yeah, and once you win.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was like, once you win, you can turn it up. You know, you can always turn it up later. You know, but I like that what you say, let your bankroll dictate that. And to some extent, let your results dictate that to some extent.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like I did this with football. I tried this with NBA, no luck with the way I was attacking the NBA. And looking back, it was just moronic the way I was attacking the NBA. Probably broke even, maybe a slight winner. But I bashed my head off the wall trying to do something like this for 30 days. And it wasn't a good process. But the beauty is now, like with all these sports books in the United States, especially the bigger ones, all the markets they offer, all these sports, there's so much stuff. You could open up one of these lobbies, take a look at, you know, markets that maybe aren't getting bet a lot, and try and come up with a simple process to model stuff. Because like I said earlier, like how long are they taking to put this stuff together? They probably, you know, like they might hit a button, the average comes out, especially on newer markets. And if you can be the first one to get to that market, or if you can find something that nobody else has, then, you know, it becomes very easy. And there's just so many markets now, and there's so many different sports. It's probably something that I should explore more myself, like from when football ends until, you know, when football begins next year. But again, like it's how do you value your time? What is your time worth? You know, that's it. How do you value
That's a very poker question. Everyone from poker talks an hourly rate. It's like you're addicted to your hourly rate. But right. You did mention that on Circles Off that you kind of stopped. You started betting, I think it was September and then stopped. And this Circles Off episode aired last year, just for everybody. Just go check it out. Great episode. And ending in the Super Bowl, you kind of say, okay, I hand my accounts off to my network, my friends. Is that still your MO
this year, at least? It's switched up a little bit this year. So basically how the last couple of years, how I've done a lot of things is once the Super Bowl ends, it's kind of a break for me. If people are handing me PPH accounts, I'll kind of leave it up to them whether they want bets going into those accounts after football or if they don't. I think with a lot of PPH accounts from football until football till when football ends till football begins, that those accounts are easy to flag for the sports book because there's just not as much square action going in like there is during football. I would guess 90% of people who bet through PPHs get crushed during football. So you could kind of maybe slip by on some guys between, you know, during the season. After the season, it sticks out more like a sore thumb. But for me now, it's handicap player props from September all the way through the Super Bowl. Super Bowl ends. This year, it was a little bit different. This year, like, I built up a pretty good network of where to get down, how to get down, and I built up a network with, you know, guys that are handicapping NASCAR, guys that are handicapping three-pointers, guys that are handicapping, you know, college points, some NBA props, and I can get the money down in places where it's not really going to stick out like a sore thumb. So we're kind of dabbling with that right now.
So you're built, yeah, this is, I mean, this is something that's pretty common. And like, there's some, I have some instances of it, but it's like information sharing with other sharps, right? Fill in the holes. You know, you sure. might specialize in one sport. They might specialize in another. And it's probably more efficient than trying to be great at every sport right. and being mediocre and, because that doesn't really win. You know, you almost have to, I'm pro specialization. So I hear you on like wanting to really stick to football and then know where you can't win, right? And then working around, have a network, work around that, right?
I think a lot of people, like when they first start and they get successful, it's almost like they want to be, and I was this way, I think, for a little while, was they want the bulk of the percentage on the wins in the account to be theirs. So they're less willing to network with smart people who can, or they'll try and beat those markets themselves and maybe they'll be successful. More often than not, they're probably not, but I'm just willing to, I'm pretty sure I know the guy, like who wins, who doesn't, is their process good? Does it look good? And I just let them do the work. And it's like, it's almost like you were saying on another episode, it's not, and I'm not comparing myself to Billy Walters here, okay? Before I say this, it's like Billy Walters. Yeah, it's kind of like what he does, like what Billy Walters. He was 50 handicappers working for him, and or he had up to 50 handicappers, whatever. Like that's fine with me. I don't have to be the one doing the work. You know, if four guys can do the work better than me, and it's good work, then just let them do the work. And if you have places to get their bets down, where you can get a piece of the pie, the person getting the bets down can get a piece of the pie. You can crank out more volume, you know, and you know, that's fine with me.
Couldn't agree more. It's another one of those like edges away from, you know, I call them away from the table. Like, what are you doing away from the table? But it's like building a network, being able to, you know, or willing to either spend some money on working with other people, like through hiring them or giving them percentages. I don't think it's like really ever been a choice I regretted, as long as it was like, you know, well thought out, you know, this is somebody who kind of knows what they're doing. We're aligned, you know, obviously we've all been, you know, stiffed by people and whatnot. It happens. But I think like more often than not, forming those relationships really allows you to take it to the next level. Because like you said, so many people want to be a lone wolf, and even the smartest lone wolf is gonna be hard pressed to compete with three pretty solid people working together, you know?
Yeah. And being a lone wolf can only get you so far. Like it was it, like, and that's where I think a lot of people like will get that. You know, I want all of the percentage, and you know, the smartest guy I work with told me, and this is like when I got kicked out of one of these casinos here, you know, he told me, he's like, just sit back now, and you know, you have a pretty good network, and you just do the work that you're doing, and you don't have to do the running around anymore. So it'll probably be more lucrative. And he was right with that. Like, you can get away with being a lone wolf for a few years, but eventually the accounts dry up, maybe where you can get down dries up, and you need to rely on other people. Maybe the guys you're relying on that are feeding you accounts, and you know, even if you're getting half of it, like, unless you build a major network where there's constantly accounts coming in, then eventually the well is going to run dry in some spots, and you have to go out and find water somewhere else.
And this doubles for both getting down and getting accounts and getting information, right? It's like, it helps you both. It's so right. Helpful.
Yeah. Like right now I'm working with a great NASCAR guy, and it's like, I'll just throw a number out there. Would you rather get, 0% of zero or 50% of 100%, you know, give me the 50% of 100%. And there you go, you know, and it still aligns with my schedule where, you know, I'm just doing more of the accounting side, and you know, it's, and that part is kind of automated. So that's, you know, that's pretty good.
Tell us about, this is something that I think a lot of that people are afraid of when going into it with multiple people, runners, people giving accounts, is the accounting. And it's like, I think, well, we actually, you know, literally hire people to help us with accounting because it's so important. But like, I think that might be the thing that stops people from going into it and creating a bigger operation, more complicated, right? So like, do you have any tips you can share, like accounting tips you can share with the listeners?
Sure. So like when I started up until, like I said, the first few years you're a lone wolf, there's not really much accounting to do. Like, especially, you know, when I first started, the first 3-4 years, there were no legal books. So you should open up all the books on Monday. You just find out what did you win, lose, do the percentages. Yep. A little different. It's different now. There's books in a lot of states. There's a lot of different stuff. You know, if you've networked with a lot of people and there's a lot of stuff going on, like my accounting trick is I have a guy do it for me. So that's like,
that's also pretty much mine.
Yeah. Like I can't make spreadsheets. I don't want to do spreadsheets, and I'm fortunate the guy that does mine, he's very good at it. And, I've known him for a long time, rarely makes mistakes. And yeah, he's very good at it. So it, you know, if that's something that you can't do and you get to a certain level where you need to get the account done, just pay somebody to do it. And it makes life a lot easier and then frees up more time to do other things, whether it's sports betting related or family time or whatever.
Yeah. And I wanted to touch on that. You write about your, you know, having a family and your, you know, your priorities outside of gambling and how you value your time, you know, has your family essentially like made you rethink? I know, you know, it's, you've been in it a while, but rethink like, oh, okay. Like I'm okay with doing X, Y, Z in betting instead of being like, oh, I'm going to be Phil Ivey and play the highest stakes ever. You know, I don't know. It's like, has it made you be more, business-like and wanting to kind of, you know, be able to take some time away from the tables?
With sports? Yes. But like when my son was born, you know, like 4.5 years ago, like I was still playing poker, still going to the casino. I was betting sports still at that time, but like I was still trying to put in a full schedule, and I transitioned to live for about a year, which it didn't go great. And I think it's easier to do. It's easier to manage your time as a sports bettor than a poker player. Poker player. Exactly. You're more at mercy. Like if the games are running, you have to be there. Like, or you're just, yeah, you're not going to be able to get that volume in, especially in live games. They usually run certain set times. not like online. And with sports betting, you can more cultivate how much time you want to spend on the actual sports betting and kind of get your own window so you can free up other time for family. And for me, having, you know, my son's 4.5 now, the most time that I can spend with him is like the biggest priority for me. Like, I just want to be around. I want to be around him all the time. I want to raise him right. And so, yeah, it's a blessing being able to, you know, just kind of set my sports schedule up how I want it to. And especially, you know, from Super Bowl to when football starts, like, that's a lot of time to have free that most parents don't.
Yeah. I feel that too with betting compared to poker. With poker, I found it hard to imagine a normal life, whereas sports betting, you can have a semi-normal life. And like we were talking about, there's different functions within a profitable sports betting operation. And some of those functions you could do as a 9-to-5. You know, it's not, it's not necessarily means that you have to be following, you know, this like this whale around every time he sits at the casino and having like the floor guy text you like, get down here, you know, like it allows you some, it allows like some form semblance of a normal life while you still get to, you know, gamble and do what you're good at.
Sure. Yeah. Especially if you can do the sports from home or whatever, it's just going to give you so much more time, like you said, than chasing a whale around. Or like in my case, it was, you know, for a year I drove, I think it was, no, for 6 months I drove from, you know, New Hampshire to Foxwoods, 2 hour, you know, it's a 2 hour commute one way, 2 hour commute back. Then like when Encore opened in Boston and I was playing there, you know, with the Boston traffic getting in there some days, you know, an hour and a half for a 45 minute drive. And then the ride home and like those hours take a toll on you after a while. And sometimes you get there, there's no good games. And in my situation, you know, I'm a limit player. The limit games were like really dying at that time, like super dying. So, you know, I got fortunate that, you know, I almost got fortunate that the pandemic happened in a way. You know, it wasn't a good thing that happened, but for me personally, like, kind of let me come down this path full time. And I already had my base kind of built up and I knew how to attack it. I knew that DraftKings was coming into New Hampshire and, you know, it just, everything kind of, all the stars aligned and I hit it at the right time. Just, that's it.
I love it because it's like, it also speaks to the power of the network because you're like, okay, like I'm playing poker, I'm playing limit, but you know, for you transitioning, you could do it. And I feel like once you have a bigger network, you feel more stable in that, like if something else comes, you can pivot, you'll hear about it, you'll find your place in it. And people who are listening to this, you know, haven't been in the industry as long as you, but how would you teach them to put themselves out there? And like, what are the benefits of networking as a gambler? Because certainly we heard in poker sometimes, like, you know, don't tell anyone your strategy, you know, be, you know, keep it tight, you know, whatever.
It's very simple. Okay. Like, what you want to do, you want to listen to smart people and you want to, you know, and if you can form relationships with smart people and listen to what they have to say objectively, like I'm very fortunate. I'll give a shout out to my buddy, Mike. I'll call him Sharp Mike. I'll give a shout out to him.
Like, Sharp Mike.
Sharp Mike. Without Sharp Mike, since 2009, like, it doesn't matter what kind of question. I could ask him anything. And he's going to, 99.9% of the time, he either knows the answer or he's going to give me the right answer. So listen to smart people and just try and form relationships with good people. Try and weed out people that, you know, that are just one way streets. And, you know, you just like this podcast, listen to this podcast. Like I just discovered this podcast recently and, you know, and I was saying earlier before we started how, like, I've gone back and listened to 5 episodes in the past week. And there's just a lot of nuggets in there that you can pick up. And especially with this podcast, because I think it's geared towards younger guys that are doing different stuff that isn't really being talked about on other podcasts. And, you know, you just want to listen to smart people. Like, just listening to like Rufus talk on his podcast, mm-hmm. like during the pandemic. I had no idea who Rufus was. Found that mm-hmm. podcast during the pandemic. I listened to every single episode, and like, you know, there's just stuff that you pick up on that's just how you can become a smarter thinker, gambler, and maybe it can confirm or deny like things that you're thinking that you're not sure about. And you can get the right answers when you are actually listening and talking to people that you consider to be Jedis. You know, just find as many Jedis as you can. That's it.
It just listen. Just sparked one of my favorite quotes from you. Now I remember in one of your long form was be a small data Jedi, right? It's like, yeah. Be able to see a small amount of data come through and find something meaningful from it. Do you want to extrapolate on that? Because I love that. And like, I use it in my brain to myself now.
What, like becoming a Jedi at doing something? Like,
no, it was, let me see if I can find the quote. What is it? Oh, becoming a Jedi on small samples of data.
Okay.
That, you wrote that in one of your, yeah.
That's just something like that takes experience. You want to be like, okay, it's like, here's an example. All right. And I've given some of these broad examples, like in that math models for knuckleheads. Okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a genius to look at a 20 game sample size, the, let's say Pat Mahomes, 350 yards versus the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Let's mm-hmm. say, I don't remember what the numbers were. Let's say 16 and four to the under. Like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that I don't care if Pat Mahomes is playing against Alabama in the Super Bowl. You give me something that's 80%+ on a past performance trend, I'm just going to bet the under and let the chips fall where they may. But a different thing is like, well, what do you do when you have no data? How do you judge stuff on small samples? And you, from trial and error, like, you just have to put in the work and you'll be able to get, you know, if you do it over and over and over and over again, like anything else, you can become what I call like a Jedi on judging things on a small sample. And it just takes experience. I mean, throw another thing. It's like what Spanky says all the time. Like, it takes experience. You sit there and you stare at that screen long enough and you see these numbers moving around. You pick up patterns and whatever. It's no different with player props. You look at the screen, you look at certain patterns, you add in stuff from the outside, whether they're point spreads, how has this game played out before, how has this team played here, and you just start to see things, add them up, put them together, and yeah, eventually you get that green lightsaber, and you know, that's it.
No, I love that because it also, I found in large samples, people especially from the more data analytics side love a nice large sample that proves they have an edge. I often say, like, if you have a big enough sample to prove you have an edge at something, it's probably already too late. Like, you should have been in there earlier when trying it out and, you know, betting, you know, before that happened, and, you know, be able right. to find the unique spots that come up in situations where there's small data sets, because the sports books, those are the situations where I think us as individuals will almost always hold the advantage over the sports books. Like in that example you were saying where you and Rob were tweeting about the wind direction. How is the sports book ever going to beat a thoughtful person who's watching the game in live betting?
Sure.
I just don't think it could happen.
Right. See, I think I actually might have taken a shot at Rob. He was talking about the wind direction and how it was getting modeled. And I said, any serious bettor should have 100% of their bankroll on this game on all prop mm-hmm. unders. But then, like, he countered with, each quarter, like what I explained earlier, like the way the wind's going, like they can't model it. And, like, it made perfect sense. And he was 100% correct. Like, you know, that's just it. But again, back to that, like judging stuff on a small sample, like if you're going to attempt to do something like that, bet really small and then, you know, bet small. And as you get more data and your edge gets proven, you bet bigger. And then maybe down the line, you might bet more on those small samples after you have a sample of betting on small samples
yep.
that have showed you success. I mean, it's simple, okay. but it's simple, but that's exactly, you know, that's what it is.
It's like have a big sample of doing well betting on small samples and then size up. Yeah.
Then you size up. Yes. Because if you don't know, you don't know. You know, you don't know until you know.
Right. And then it's time to make some money, you know.
Right.
Do you think do you think that people have trouble, like smart people have trouble pulling the trigger in situations like that, even if it's pretty obvious that they have an edge, just because it's like a small sample size situation?
It's probably different for everybody. Like some people, I mean, you know, like I said, if you go with your intuition, then, you know, and it just depends. Maybe how much gamble do you have in you? How much do you trust what you're seeing is right? I mean, I think it's a different answer for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, some people might say, hey, hell no, I'm not betting on this until I need, you know, this much data. And, you know, other people might just say, no, like I've seen this 1,000 times before and it's going to go this way, whatever, 60% of the time. So, yeah.
Do you think the best bettors have that instinct to like pull the trigger in those spots? Like the best to me, I always think, Billy Walters, it's like, boom, I'm going for it.
I think the best originators do. I mean, otherwise they just wouldn't make the plays. So I don't know if it's something, just if you're a good originator and, you know, you've seen something, your model has seen something like that happen before or whatever, then you just pull the trigger. That's it.
Yeah. And I want to go into your long form because it's been so – oh, actually, the gamble thing was funny. You had a funny tweet. It was like, I sweated – this was – I think you posted this yesterday or today. It's like I sweated the first half of a basketball game, and I can confidently say like being a degen is more fun than being a winning bettor. I want to touch on that because I think it's true.
Sure.
And I think it's turn off on – It stops some people from becoming a winning bettor just because it's not as fun, right?
Yeah. Sports in general were more interesting to me when I was a losing bettor. I'll tell you, that's 100%. Just way more interesting. Watching the games, everything. I still enjoy watching some of the games, but when I was a degenerate, like, the games were everything. Like, you know, thinking you – trying to pick who's going to win and, like, actually thinking that, like, you can, like, maybe – pick these games accurately, which like nobody can if they're just, you know, just a regular bet, you know, regular average guy. But yeah, last night, this group I'm working with had some first halves, and I had a little break while my son, my wife was giving my son a bath, and I threw on the end of the first half of the Ohio State game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was looking good, and I just sweat the last like 4 minutes, and you know, I think we had like over Ohio State, like 75 or something like that for the first half. And you know, they hit like 4 threes in a row. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, it wasn't even for a lot of money, but like, you know, it just, it sparked it out in me. And I was like, yeah, all right. Let's, you know, I haven't felt like this in a while. Like, random college basketball. I mean, I used to bet basketball every night when I was a degen and just until I went broke, you know, and.
Right.
Just kind of brought that back, but I didn't want to tap it out too much because, you know, the amount of time that I can't, I think people waste way too much time, like sweating these games.
Yes.
Like the time is, and you until you have children or like major responsibilities, you just don't know. Like the time isn't there anymore. Okay. Your time disappears when you have kids. So you just, you're at mercy to, you know, what they need. And, yeah, that's the whole thing. Like sweating basketball every night. Like, no, thank you. Like I sweat the stuff that I originate in football on the weekends, a fair amount. But the emotion, I don't get crazy emotional about it. But like, I'll sweat them because I want to see how the work that I did does. And when I do well, it's great. But like, yeah, I felt that degeneracy last night kick back in. I had to back off a little bit here so I don't go on. So I don't go on tilt and just, you know, put the mortgage for the house up, you know?
Do you think there's any way to have both? The excitement and the professional, you know,
yeah, stability? There's definitely a way to do it. I mean, you can sweat a lot of the games and still be professional, but, you know, if you don't have a robotic approach when it comes to placing your bets, then yeah, you could obviously go on tilt and just start betting on things. And there are a lot of people that have those type of tilt problems. You know, and it, especially like novice bettors, you know, like it's, they'll just go crazy and betting on this and that and the other thing. But I think when you become a seasoned, true professional, and that's going back to poker again, like, that's one thing that game selecting teaches you. If you don't have good game selection, or if you're playing on your, you're not playing on your A game or even your high B game, when you're playing on your C, D, F game, you're just, you're wasting time. You're going to get aggravated and you're going to lose. And it's no different with sports betting. If you're just clicking buttons, hoping for this, or you think that because you saw this, just it usually doesn't end too well. So whatever. I just like to let people do the work. Bets go in. I don't even sweat a lot of it. I'll check the accounts on Mondays or whenever there's an accounting update, see how we did, look back. That's it. Especially for the stuff that I'm not modeling myself.
It's so much easier to not sweat a bet that someone else like makes that you have a piece of or whatever it is, but if they click it in or if they, you know, originate it, like that happens, you know, with me and my partners, if they are like, oh, this is the bet, you know, whatever. And I haven't been looking at it that day. I don't I don't give a shit what happens with the bet. If I put it in, I'm like, oh my God, what the.
Yeah. That's like, the guy that does my accounting and he does some other stuff. Great guy. Call him Midwest Charlie. But Midwest Charlie, like, I was telling him, I go, I don't want to know, like, about any of the results. Just let it go. We have enough action in. We'll just see what it looks like at the end of the week. And he's like, but I got to tell you, you know, we really got screwed on these five overtime. I'm like, I don't want to hear about it. I don't care. Like, and that's the stuff that, like, when you're in the thick of things, like when you are a degenerate, like, which I was, and like, that's the stuff that, you know, you talk about, oh, I lost like this, I lost like that, and whatever. Like, none of that matters. If the work is good, then you're going to win X percent of the time. And I think sweating it down to the nitty gritty every night, it's just a big waste of time, and it's probably terrible for your brain, you know?
It's terrible. And I have that in me a little, like, where if I go back, even if I didn't sweat, like, let's say it's a golf matchup, and if I go back and check the score, I don't even check the account or whatever, because that might not be, you know, it might not be my account, but I'll check the score. And if it's like within a stroke, you better believe I'm clicking in to see what happened on the last hole. I'm like, oh, did I get fucked here? You know, like, right, I'm like, I don't know why I click it. It doesn't matter. I lost the bet, but it's just like for some reason, I just need to know if it was just like really bad or not. And
oh yeah. Sometimes knows. I'll do that with like a lot of like college totals or an NBA total or whatever. Mm-hmm. Check the last minute and just see like, was there, you know, 20 points scored in the last minute. Did some team take a meaningless three? Like, I'll check it from like, I'll after the fact sweat it, but that takes 10 seconds to do. And then you get away from it. It's different than, you know, sweating the first, second, third, and fourth quarter in an NBA game, which is meaningless, I think, unless you really love the NBA or you're trying to pick up tendencies that are going to go in, like really go into your handicapping. You know,
do you have a film watching, like a film watching portion of your process?
I don't do any film watching, but like I said, when I spit my numbers out for football props, the guy who is one of my partners he does a lot of that. He will look over stuff and he's come up with some stuff that's just like, I just wouldn't be able to come up with it by looking at the numbers. You know, it's just subjective stuff from what he's seen and who's playing who and what the matchup is. And I leave that stuff to him, and he loves doing that. I hate doing that. I could get away without doing it, like without even having him do it. I'd still do okay. But some of the stuff he comes up with is it's pretty good for sure. And
it's defensible because someone else, it's hard for people to replicate the process of like watching a lot of film, right, and drawing a meaningful conclusion.
Yeah, like I'll just give a broad example. Like they'll put a quarterback's yards out at like 300 and I'll have it as like a no play or something. I'm just throwing 300 out there. This is just random. And he'll break something down and he'll call me and be like, we really have to look at this. Like, I don't see how this guy gets over, you know, 210 yards in this specific spot because of X, Y, Z, whatever. And like 7 times out of 10, when he calls me with one of these spots, you know, we're winning the bet by 90 yards, like you said, maybe more, or, you know, maybe they're going to run more because of whatever. And it's like, yeah, like that's something that he excels at that I wouldn't want to do and that he likes to do, you know? So helps that he's a former football coach too. So like
that helps,
loves doing that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That really helps because yeah. I watch football film. I don't think I would have any thought meaningful conclusions, but right. Who knows? But I think it helps if you really know the sport. And it also helps that I feel like it's unreasonable to think that the sports books or whoever or the data providers for the sports books are doing that, you know,
right.
They're just trying to get yep. a menu out. So it gives you like, I guess that would be an important question because there's some cynicism in the space on, you know, how long we're going to be able to make money for this. And you've had a long professional gambling career. So I think you're credentialed to talk about this, but what's your level of optimism going forward on, you know, keeping an edge and being a sports bettor or being an APA, you know, however you think about it.
Sure. Well, the one thing I know is like edges die. Mm-hmm. All edges eventually die. I mean, you might be able to save some that people don't see for a long time, but it doesn't matter what you're doing. Poker, like I said, in, you know, in 2005, when I wasn't a professional, you could go online and play 300, 600 limit hold'em with three terrible players. You fast mm-hmm. forward to 2017, 18, you can't find a good 30, 60 game on. You can't find a good mm-hmm. 15, 30 game. Okay. Like it's the same thing. Like, Bitcoin was only, you know, a lower price for a while. Now it's like it's to the moon, and it just that edge is gone. You know, if you consider that an edge, just buying it, and like it's the same thing with sports betting. Edges die, and you just got to be ready to move on to the next thing. And that's pretty much it. Just like I said, if you have an edge, strike first, strike hard, no mercy. Because these things don't last forever. I don't know how long this market's going to be able to sustain what it is. I mean, people are getting away with things and, like, you know, setting up accounts with VIPs. How much stricter are they going to be on that in 3 to 5 years? How much are they going to – how much are the lines going to tighten up? Like, the algorithms that they have to produce player props, how tight are those going to get? How much faster are they going to get moving lines when there's injuries mm-hmm. in the NBA? Like, you know, everything evolves and you just have to be ready to evolve with it. And if you don't, you get left behind, and that's fine. If the time ever comes where I'm not profitable originating, which is what I would love to, I'd take less money just to originate and yep. have the satisfaction of the work. But when that day comes, when I'm not profitable anymore, that's fine. I'll have other people do the work for me. That's it. Just, there you go. You guys do the work, and I'll do less work. I'll take less money.
Yeah,
that's it.
Speaks to the power of the network yet again, because you put yourself. You're tough to kill, right? It's like, okay, if I'm not profitable originating, I can do X, Y, Z. I have this network, this experience. I can get down. I can, you know, build you an accounting system, take a cut, whatever it is. It's like, you know, be forward thinking. And I do think there's an existential dread in gambling of knowing your edge is going to die and not knowing what's next. But I do, having been through some iterations of myself and my edges and my games, like you just get to a point where you're like, all right, it's going to happen. You know, this is the life. Right. And like, I try and talk about that a little bit for people who are like live arbing right now. And seeing that kind of go get less profitable and become very nervous, you know. But it's happened in everything. It's been you know, sit and go poker. It's been, you know, cash. It's been MTTs. It's been live poker, even, you know, like lots of stuff just got a lot tougher.
I think it's easier to evolve when you've been doing it for a long time. It's easier to evolve because you've seen a lot of stuff. And, like, I'll give you an example of, like, an edge that I used to have. that it's not around anymore. It used to be, Bovada used to originate college football running back reception props. Okay. Every running back, I'll give you a broad example. So if a running back played 10 games and they had one reception in 9 games and they had 2 receptions in the other game, so they got 9 games with exactly 1 reception. They have 1 game with exactly 2 receptions. They would put – so now the 11th game comes. They would put the line at minus 160 to under 1.5. So, okay, for every guy on every team in the top 25, like that's how they would – basically that's how the number would get set. So you run the number, you know, you win 9 times, yeah. You get a grand on each one, there's 9,000, you lose one, 1,600. I'm just going to trust that what's happened 90% of the time, that's not there anymore. That edge died. So you just got to get better at other stuff you're doing or find other things to do. But like that was around for 3 or 4 years. And I remember telling a friend about this and he didn't like it. He's like, well, he only has to catch 2 passes and you lose. I'm like, yeah, no, well, okay. 90%, buddy. Like, run the math. You don't need to be a genius to know that. But then, you know, as they open more markets in a lot of these sports, you might find something like this. I mean, it mm-hmm. might not last long, but stuff like this exists. Maybe not as egregious as that. Like I said, there's a guy making that line that has, and maybe an hour to make it on a Saturday morning. He's probably out mm-hmm. hungover from the night before, and he just spits them out, and there you go. So, whatever.
I think there are egregious things. Like, there was the whole correlation angle for the Prize Picks, underdogs of the world. There's new correlated stuff that they don't price as correlated stuff all the time. Obvious mistakes too. So it's not like that never happens. It just sucks when it goes away because you don't know when it's going to happen again. And I don't know. How much of it do you think is like, you know, keeping the lights on or like surviving between the big spikes where you're like, oh, this edge is really, really, really good. And it's like, okay, we lost it. Staying alive, waiting for like the next big thing. You know, is that kind of your, like, do you see like a kind of big influx in results, or do you feel like you're more steady, you know, getting solid EV across the whole football season?
I mean, it's got every year it gets harder. I mean, for a couple of years, like when DraftKings first opened, it was cherry pick. I mean, it was really good. Like the first like couple of years they were here, really good. I mean, it's still the edges are still, there's still really good edges, but like they're just every year you should expect that they're going to get worse and worse. Just like anything, any market, it's just going to get harder and harder. Maybe AI jumps in and solves a lot. And then, you know, if these 3 years from now, what's AI going to look? Are they going to be able to, are they going to be able to put these lines together? Like, I know they can't now, but like, if I can come up with a system off the top of my head, like, what's the smartest computer of all time going to be able to do when it's getting smarter and learning from itself every day? What's that going to look like in 3 years? So, you just never know. I just know from poker, it always got harder. Sports betting, some of the edges even before I started that I hear these guys talking about that they had, they're just not there anymore. Even like the big game like the Super Bowl, those edges are like, not all of them. I mean, there's so much stuff you can still do great, but you know, some of the stuff from when I started betting it, the year the Pats played the Rams in, what was it, 2018? Yeah. Like, some of that stuff, it's just not there anymore. So you just got to be ready to evolve. If you don't evolve, you become a dinosaur, you know, and if you want, you can become a dinosaur. Just make sure you're working with the guys that are evolving.
Yeah.
You know? So, yep. You know?
And have like a bit of a cushion too. I always find that that's helpful, just kind of off the table. But if you know, I feel like a lot of long-term successful gamblers are a little stingy because it's more reassuring to know that you could lose your edge for a little bit. Hopefully you have a little in the back pocket. That's something I didn't do early in my career that I've completely like flipped 180. Now like later in my career has been more conscientious money going out. Right. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, give myself some peace of mind for the times when I might lose my edge or not make as much money.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's huge. That's been huge for me. Like, the deeper I've gotten, the more that I can get down now, the more successful I've become, it makes it a little bit easier when stuff disappears. So, like, yeah, you should. I mean, I'm not a big spender. I'm not frugal, but I'm not a big spender. But, like, yeah, it's always good to have that bankroll built up for tough times when stuff maybe, you know, it doesn't work out so well or whatever. And, you know, you can kind of take a few shots and then just move forward. And, you know, it's, yeah, save your money.
Save your money, everybody.
Save your money, invest your money. Just don't blow it.
Well, what do you think about that mix? Because I know even like myself, I'm don't spend a lot, but I'm also very pro like putting it back into the bankroll. That's just my nature. Are you, and I know there's differing, I've heard different things from successful poker players. They're like, put some in stocks, or it's like, if you can use the money in gambling, you know, put it in the roll. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take like, I'll put stuff into like stocks or like retirement stuff or whatever you can afford to do. But for me, it was different. Like, for years, I didn't put any money. I wasn't making enough money to put into that stuff. I was making enough to support my family, but not to put into that type of stuff. But if there's room for you to grow as a gambler, I mean, I'm not saying don't invest, but you could, if you have a good edge, then I think keeping the money in your bankroll so you can bet bigger is probably better. And then when you reach a certain height where you're not going up further or you come down a little bit, then, you know, maybe then it's time to take some of your sports betting bankroll and, you know, whatever you can afford to invest. But, you know, sometimes it's better off to just keep it for the elevator ride up. Like, I think I wouldn't be where I am as a bettor right now if I invested heavily in other stuff the last 5 years, unless it was like hitting Bitcoin, like right time, but just like your standard, whatever investments, like, you know, I wouldn't have afforded me to get to gamble where I like to gamble or like where I am now, you know?
Yeah. I feel the same way, but sometimes it's like tricky advice to give because on the surface, it feels so degen. It's like, don't invest that. You need to use that gambling. But it's like, you know, as long as you're an advantage player and gambling is in fact investing and you're just looking at it in terms of return, then it's comparable.
Right. As long as you have, you know, your edge, if you know your edge and it's a true edge and it's defined, then I just try to keep running it up so I can, you know, because then you can at least have that to fall back on if, you know, something, you know, some catastrophe happens or whatever.
Right.
But like I said before, like, that's where like networking and finding the right people to network with. So, you know, you always have other options to fall back on in this, if you're going to stay in this industry.
Yeah. It kind of leads to, I want to ask you about like your long form Twitter content.
Sure.
It's really good. And clearly it's like very thoughtful and you spend a lot of time making it good. Is that part of, you know, you want to write a book one day, or you're just kind of putting yourself out there maybe to meet new people, or you just like writing, you know, what's been the push to do that?
I like to write. I used to, when I was like coming up in poker, I used to write like blogs bi-weekly, like, and stuff like that. And I would write a little bit about it. And now it's gotten to a point for me, like, yeah, I'm considering writing a book. And, you know, this is like a way to kind of organize my thoughts in like stories, stuff that I won't forget. And I don't think I'm really hurting myself by putting it out there. People seem to enjoy reading it. I've gotten like a lot of good feedback. I've shared a lot of stuff that I don't think a lot of other gamblers would share, whether it'd be, you know, a lot of the edges I talked about are like stuff that's come and gone. And, you know, I don't mind throwing numbers out there. Like, you know, I pay my taxes every year. So like putting numbers out there isn't a big deal for me. And like, yeah, maybe love to write a book one day. And like, you know, like where I came from, like when I was like 14 or 15, I was an athlete who had the world in front of him. You know, I was 6'1", 200 pounds. I ran a sub 540. I could bench 250 pounds when I was 15 years old. Wow. And then from 16, all that went away. I just went down the party life from when I was 16 till I was 32. So now I'm just kind of sharing. This is like from my professional gambling is just kind of my rebounding. You know, it's rebounding in life. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's it. So I'm basically just writing stories about my rebound from 32 years old until I'm 47 now. So, you know, I felt like I was on top of the world. I lost all that, and now I'm writing about this stuff. And then maybe if I write a book, I'll get into the stuff that happened before then. Maybe I'll write about it in the near future too. But for now, I'm just sticking with the long form gambling stuff that a lot of people can relate to. And it certainly has helped me network as well. Like just because, you know, people can see, all right, this guy's serious. This guy gambles. He really gambles. And it's helped me meet some great people.
I think it's wonderful. I think that your first one you posted, I think I DM'd you. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Or something like, this is the best thing I've read this month. And it was right. About, you know, just kind of, it was such like a AP, like life actually as an AP story. Like you said, real number amounts, real strategies that you were doing, an actual story. And sure. You don't see that. And we were talking like the numbers is, you know, because maybe some people might not want to disclose how much they made for tax reasons or whatever. But, you know, I do think there's a lack of honest content. So seeing that was super refreshing. And I know I love reading them. I'm always eager for the next volume in the Maniac Chronicles to drop.
I love writing. I love writing this stuff because a lot of this stuff is like fresh in my mind. A lot of the recent stories, like, you know, like, you know, some of the run-ups or like the blackjack one that I posted the other day, like, and some of that stuff I've written about before, and I have like kind of some bloggy type drafts or stuff that I've posted before. And, yeah, like that's the type of stories I like reading about. I like hearing numbers, like, what did you bet? How did it happen? And it's just like, it's fun stuff to read for a gambler. There's, like you said, there's not a lot of it out there. People might not want to write about it either because they're hiding something they don't want people to know, or maybe they have a fear of getting robbed or something like that. But like, I'll tell you what, I made sure I put, a large security system on my house before I started writing this stuff.
Yeah.
You always want to feel comfortable. So.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, there's many reasons why some people don't like writing, but I enjoy it. And I'd maybe like to write a book someday. And I think a lot of these stories will keep a lot of the stuff fresh where I could just, you know, I could probably write a book on the 7 or 8 chapters that I put out there already, because it's, you know, there's a lot of characters in these blogs for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And some of I think what's good about the content is you make it flow nicely, but it could cover a long period of time, but you still have it succinct. Like your poker story covered a long period of time, but it's still read like, you know, one story that fit on Twitter. So I'm sure there's so much more to that if that were to be a book, it would just become a book because there's so much hidden in each sentence that, you know, was happening behind the scenes, at least to us as the readers of the short form.
Yeah. There's like probably a lot of edges that I either maybe still have, or edges that have gone away that I haven't talked about, or just, you know, all kinds of little things like that. Things that have happened in casinos that I haven't talked about, you know, just like whatever. There's just stuff that, you know, I try to put enough out there where it paints a good story, but, you know, obviously I could add other stuff in that could easily like make it a very readable book for somebody that enjoys like a, you know, someone that was like in the gutters to somebody that became, you know, I would say pretty successful, you know, at least for the gambling space. And, you know, and some of the stories, I, you know, maybe they just resonate with people, and it seems to be that way because I've gotten a lot of feedback, and I appreciate everybody that's said that.
It's so good, man. And that's like exactly, it's like the honesty plus just like the sheer perseverance and success of the story of like being down on yourself, where like I think sure. we all have been. There's been periods in sure. my life where I relate a lot to your writing and being just super in the dumps, whether it was in poker or just mentally. But you know, just the honesty that you put out there so people can see that this is a path you can follow. You're not alone. You know, there's a light at the right. end of the tunnel, and right. it's just such great stuff, man. I can't say it enough, but I would love to read your book. And I really hope you do, do write one.
And another good thing about it is like I said, like I've been so fortunate to build like great relationships with people that have helped me over the, like if I needed help with anything like gambling related, like, you know, just knowing certain people always there can help me. Like I had mentioned earlier, my buddy Sharp Mike, like mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now if it wasn't for a guy like him. And the amount of people that have like come into my DMs, just like asking me questions, just being able to help people that, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of, they just need, maybe they need a little bit of a clue. I enjoy giving, I don't mind giving back, you know, mm-hmm. people gave to me. Yeah. And, you know, it's a weight, you know, and I enjoy giving back and helping people. So yeah, I appreciate everybody that's reached out. And if, you know, if anyone ever has any questions for me, feel free to hop in my DMs.
No, I think it's so valuable. Just get, you know, give a little first and you might get back a lot, you know, it's like, it's I think the nature of the industry, sometimes we're hesitant to give first, but like, if you do, I know for me, it was a while till I put myself out here, made content. Once I did, gave some first, gave up a little edge, maybe a right. nugget or here that I wouldn't have sure. done before.
Right.
It's pay. I don't make money off this. I don't have ads, right. but it's like made me money, I think, just in terms of meeting people.
Of course. Networking.
It's definitely improved 100%. My life. You know, like I'm happier.
That's, you know, Johnny mentioned that on Circles Off on one of the recent episodes, like people are putting a lot of stuff on. People are giving their edges away. Like, daily and you know, like maybe somebody's, you know, if you're posting something, you're getting something out of it, and that's like so true. If you're, you know, you're getting something out, whether it's for you or, you know, something of value, you're getting something. And yeah, for sure, then like the network, it's the same thing with like Spanky with Bet Bash. Mm-hmm. How much do you think that's helped him? Maybe he hasn't turned a profit on the actual Bet Bash sales, but maybe he's gotten 1,000 accounts. Like, who, you know what I mean? Like,
probably.
It doesn't really matter what you do. Like, if you know, if you're putting yourself out there, you know, you're gonna have shots to meet different people or mm-hmm. network or whatever it is. But you know, a lot of it is you know, at least for, you know, the Maniac Chronicles, it's like it's satisfying for me to write it and then read it and be like, oh wow, this shit actually did it. This fucking happened, you know?
Yeah,
like, you know?
Yeah, it helps you, I'm sure, yeah. just kind of yeah. see how far you've come or seeing the cool shit that sure. you've done or the, you know, successes and failures you've had. I mean, it's,
sure.
you know, it's kind of, I often find I don't reflect too much unless I write. So I'm sure that might be the case for you. And you're like, oh yeah, like this was yeah. a crazy kind of turn of events.
Yeah. And especially with like sports gambling or even poker or whatever, like it's not a 9-to-5. So you're like, you're in a tunnel all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just, sometimes it's hard to stop and reflect because you're just going, 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 mm-hmm. going, 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 going. And like some of these stories are just, you know, they're just easy to write because they're so forged in my brain. Like, okay, this happened then, like, you know, this whole year or, you know, this night when, you know, I had this massive run in blackjack or whatever mm-hmm. it is. It's just, it's easy to write and it's fun to write about too, you know?
For sure. It's a cool industry to write about because the character is the, just like so non-normal nature of it is always just inherently interesting. And then of course, yeah. like you're picking the best experiences on top of that. So, sure. Yeah, man. The book would be all time. I think it would be awesome. And sure. I encourage, let's get everyone to really pump up the Maniac Chronicles, because
there we go.
That will probably, you know, already a great book name. The Maniac Chronicles is a great book name. So I feel like we just need to get some more retweets, some more likes, and just like propel this forward.
I was the one name I came up with if I was going to write a book was Unorthodox Path, but I think I looked on Amazon and somebody already wrote that.
Someone had it.
I think so. So I'm going to have to come up with something else, you know?
It's annoying because the Golden Pan's name was my Reddit name before I had a Twitter or anything. So I, you know, like through random series of events, get a Reddit following and then go on Discord. And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to do Twitter. Everyone's on Twitter. Golden Pan's 13 is taken. I'm like, how is that? Like, I'm Golden Pan's 013 now. I'm like, this is insane. Just like super unlucky. And that was like the your name, right? You're like China Man somewhere, and then like put the Maniac after.
Right. Yeah, I think I tried to put the Chinaman, but like you're talking Poker Stars in 2004, like there's no
chance. It's an image play,
like the Chinaman, there's no way that's going to be available. And I just, you know, by whim, I just put the IAC on the end. And I think another reason why was because, did you watch Deadwood?
Yeah, I love Deadwood.
Do you remember Mr. Wu? The crazy,
Yeah.
That was my avatar. Like I used,
and that was around that time, right?
Yeah, it was the exact time. So like Mr. Wu is my avatar. And you know, that guy was certainly a maniac. That guy was crazy. He was the best character in the whole show.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, it probably got me a lot of action. I'd imagine like just that name got me a ton of action. You don't know how many people I had like, beating them heads up, like the racial slurs coming in, like at the after beating them heads up. And I'm just like, I'm just sitting over here like, wow, maybe it did work, you know? So, yeah.
For sure. I remember I experimented with some names. One of my names on one of my merge skin names was Loose Stay at Home Mom. I thought for some reason that would get me a lot of action. I feel like it worked all right. It's kind of a weird name, and it's like you just put the word loose in. But I think China Maniac is probably the best action name I've heard. But that's, you know, you gotta worry about your image, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what's funny about like a name like Loose Stay at Home Mom. There were people at the peak of the poker boom in like 2005, 2006, you know, 2007. That would, you know, put like a hot girl in their avatar with like a name, something like that. And they scammed some well-known pros for like 25, 50, 75,000, where they would get them on like in AOL chat rooms, form a relationship with them. And it was really a guy on the other side. And they would be sending them like, cause the money that was going around in the poker boom, like people were just like, all right, send me 30,000, boom, send me 20, send me 50, especially for the higher stakes player and the sponsored players that were getting so much money. But yeah, there were people getting scammed by like people with avatars like that for, you know, mid five figures, maybe even six figures sometimes. Yeah.
Well, some well-known pros, we won't out them, but that's unfortunate. I mean,
if you Google it, it'll probably come up. There was one like pretty well-known pro for sure. And, you know, you kind of feel bad because it's almost like the Nigerian scammers that have those shops set up over there. They almost got my mother. Like, she's like, I've been talking to this guy. He's so nice. You know, like I've been talking to him for 3 weeks. And then like the next day she's like, he's stuck wherever. Mm-hmm. And he wants me to send him $700. And it's like, you know, people can fall for it. It's not that difficult, you know, like, if you're living in an online world that you're not used to, and the internet was kind of new then.
My friend's grandmother got scammed like that because someone called her saying my friend was in jail in another country. Right. And so she pays them. And then his parents, my friend's parents, call him and get mad at him for right. living a lifestyle that would make the grandmother believe it.
Yeah. What's crazy now with AI too is like you've seen like some of these voice swaps with like the GRP thing. Have you seen those voice swaps?
Yeah. I see those videos. Yeah.
So the scammers are going to start using that when they have somebody's name. They could call and make that voice sound exactly like the person who it's supposed to be. And then, you know, just let the scam go. Like, I've heard of those happening, but I can only imagine with the technology getting better and better, it's like going to be easier to do that, especially to like older folks that are unsuspecting. When somebody calls and says, hey, you know, it's their granddaughter or whatever, like, and it sounds just like her, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll probably when we're old, I'll fall for the scam, sure. whatever it is. You know?
Like, keep your eyes peeled out there, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you know, I don't know what like the question necessarily is, but like, you know, there's been so many scams in poker recently, actually, right? Like you've been reading about the ACR stuff. Sure. The GG poker, like backdoor, stuff. Do you have any insight on like the future of online poker? I'm curious because I haven't really kept up with anybody from the industry, but I'm just curious on, your thoughts on those sites.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but I mean, online poker is, it's on the verge of death. Everything's going towards these live streams or casino play. And like, yeah, these online sites are still operating, but like, does a site like ACR really have do they really want to stop all these bot farms? Like that's how they're printing money. They're printing rake that way. And for them to stay alive, they probably need those people. Without those people, there's just not enough recreational players probably to support. The sharks would just kill them. So I don't know, the online poker, I can't even, like, I'll tell you, right towards the pandemic, I was getting in some private games online and I was playing against these guys from, I think they were from Serbia, and I was friends with them. I was in some of the same games with them. I talked to them online, but like nice guys and stuff, but like, they had to have been using like the craziest software to come up with some of the lines they were coming up with. And then of course, 6 months later, one of my friends is like, yeah, if you want to win now, you have to use this stuff. And like, he's telling me like, yeah, that line that guy took against you in that hand is
right.
Certainly like, you know, whatever. So like, RTA. I don't know.
It's like RTA, right? Like,
yeah, there was definitely RTA stuff, like just stuff that I've never seen before people win with. And these guys were just crushing. And the collusion, it's so easy to
the collusions. Like, yeah, that's private games to me. I'm online collusion. I'm like, I don't know. That sketches me out.
Yeah. I just don't see how they're going to solve it. I mean, like, I guess you have to be on video, something like that.
Yeah.
With like strict, you know, KYC, but when you open the account, like you need all that stuff. Cause most of these sites, they'll just let you sign up, let you play. And then when you hit the cash out button, then they try and find out who you are. And they have no incentive to do that when you first start. Like, it's all about the rake. So, I don't know. It's just, it's not a good place to be. And on top of it, poker players are so much better today than they were 5 years ago, 2 years ago. Like, they're just all so much better with all the learning tools, the software tools, all the coaching at the top level, all these live streams, watching the best players. It's just, I don't know, if you're going to go into a poker career, I don't think online's the place to do it. I would go to a casino, go somewhere in LA, or find some casino in Mississippi off the beaten path where, you know, you're playing with like the local plumber every night or something, you know?
Yeah. No, it seems like it's so weird because, you know, when you and I were playing online, it was the be all end all. And now it's just dead. I'm like, sad to see, but, you know, live has its advantages, you know, it gets you out of the house, meeting people, the old school pros, they're all, you know, live players watching high stakes poker back in the day. I certainly liked watching live. So It's cool.
Sure. Yeah.
Are we gonna play some poker at Bet Bash this year?
You know, I bought my ticket and I did the itinerary. I did not. I didn't sign up for the.
I didn't either. Poker tournament. I didn't either. But we could go play cash somewhere or something.
Yeah, yeah. I did the VIP, but I might sign up for that poker tournament. But yeah, there should be some off time. Definitely go play some cash. Limit hold'em. Limit hold'em at the Bellagio.
I like the Bellagio. Okay, couple limit, couple no limit.
Yeah, I could probably send you. I mean, since you were a no limit heads up player, I could probably just forward you a chart. You could just take that chart, sit down in a 30-60 limit game, and just print money just using this chart. Like that's, I don't know. That's how bad the live.
We all have our charts. We could swap charts because I had the heads up Sengo charts. Yeah, nothing like a poker. Don't separate a poker player from his charts.
Right.
I'd love to see it. Well, sure. I know that now I think this is a new record. I've been smashing length records in podcasts, but I want to let you go, and we'll, hopefully have you back on when you release the book.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably next year. That's just my guess. No, I don't know. But good luck with it. I'll be there for the Chronicles.
That's one thing about a book. Like, sure, I'd love to write a book and get it done in like a year, but like, how much can you? I can't like possibly write a book and knowing that it would be the best book, putting certain stuff in there that I don't want to put in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to wait until this market gets crushed, like we said.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's going to be, but you know, like you were saying earlier, just make as much money for as long as you can and build it up, because you never, ever know when it's going to stop. I mean, it's not ever going to stop, but it could really, I mean, at any point in time, your market could get taken away, or they just get sharper. Other people get sharper. So save the money and just stack it up. That's pretty much it.
And we both have experience playing backed. I mean, and playing backed in poker is essentially like you're working for somebody, you're paying them, you're playing their money, you pay them a percentage of their fees. And like, for whatever reason, young in my poker career, I just didn't see the light of like saving up my own role. Then I don't have to pay out that percentage. You know, it's like,
oh yeah,
I don't know why I didn't see that, but you know, it's rampant in gambling to be a couple bad months away from disaster. So if you can prevent that, that's a huge off the table edge. Sure. Easy to conceptualize. It's not complicated. It's just, you know,
always live to fight another day.
Always
live always. To fight another day. You need to be able to bet tomorrow. So don't go on tilt, you guys.
And what was the Cobra? I liked your Cobra Kai motto. What was it?
Strike first, strike hard, no mercy. I actually mentioned that in a recent post too. It's like Mr. Limited, you know, and he talks about some great stuff about, you know, how to not get limited, whatever. And it's like, every situation is different. Like I think DraftKings let me win $250,000 or something like that. And if I employed those tactics, are they going to let me win that much? Not, probably not. So that's why I live and die by strike first, strike hard, no mercy. They want to kick me out in a day, kick me out in a day. But every once in a while, you're going to come across one that's just going to let you run it to the moon. And I've been fortunate to have a few of those, which is very good. So it's, you know, apples and oranges for different people.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Like Mr. Limited stuff is great stuff.
Yeah,
there's also times to hit it hard, because you might not know why, but you might just get like a mile of rope that you never saw coming. You know, like you said with DraftKings making 250K. I had a Caesars situation where my it's up like 150 on Caesars really quickly and like still could bet. You know, it just happens.
Yeah.
Like you don't know, you know.
Yeah, it happens. Like a lot of people will say that with like local PPH bookies, like take it easy on them. And it's like, from my experiences, if they're sharp, they cut you off quick. If they're not sharp, sometimes they just let you run it to the moon. And if they're a big book in a big city, then you might be able to get away with more if they're booking 500 people or 1,000 people mm-hmm. or 2,000 people. They might not even see you and notice you, you know? So I don't
know. Is there any way you take the pulse on those PPHs? Like, by if you can judge kind of like the size of their book? Ask around.
I mean, whoever got you the account, you know, how big is it, this guy? Have you, you know, what's your past experience? What have you gotten away with? And you can kind of get a pulse on it. But like, you know, if usually that's why, like, with a lot of these college bookies and like younger kids, like, they're either not going to pay you or you're just going to get cut off really quick. Mm. But that's why I just say, I just strike. I don't try and dance around anything. Strike. And if they let you go, they let you go. If they let you run a mile, run a mile. They let you run 10 miles, run 10 miles. You know, it's if a sharp bookie's sharp and a not sharp bookie's not sharp, especially the PPH, you know, like, they just do what they do on their experience. I've had guys that have, you know, they were like, I've been up front with some guys, like, I'm going to win. I'm just letting you know now, I'm going to win. So like, if you're going to let me bet these numbers, like, you're guaranteeing me, you're basically giving me a word you're going to pay. And I've had guys tell me, I've been in business since 1985 and I'm undefeated. Nobody's ever beaten me before. And if you can find a guy like that, that has never run into a sharp player, yeah, you can get a lot of rope, you know?
I love that.
They do exist. They exist. I mean, some, you know, they're out there. They are there.
That's like, I heard Spanky say that on one of his episodes. He'll be like, listen, I'm going to win. I'm a winner, you know, whatever. And I've wondered about that. Like, it's effectiveness, because part of me is like, oh, it's like, you know, why would a sharp ever say that? So it almost makes you look square, or it's just like kind of making sure that it's like, hey, I told you.
They're not going to believe you either. Like, most of them just be like, no, you're not. I mean, a sharp bookie might say, yeah, okay, you're really going to win? Okay, we don't want your business. It's fine. And then a sharp bookie who stiffs people might just not want to deal with it either. Almost better off avoiding it right there and just not using that guy, which is something to look into. If this is another topic that we could touch on real quick before we finish.
Yeah,
is,
yeah, for sure.
Like, if you're a middleman and you're getting accounts for like people or, you know, syndicates or whatever, like, do your homework with who you're dealing with. And I don't think that I've told somebody that it's not a bad strategy to warn them, like, hey, I'm going to win, or, you know, my cousin's going to be betting on this account. If you're not going to be betting on it, your cousin's going to be betting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wins, and he wins big. So let's just get that out of the way. And sometimes that will save you, you know, from them stiffing you, or maybe later on they say, oh yeah, you were, you know, you're using a bot or whatever, or you cheated. Like, they'll tell you cheated sometimes when you win. So, like,
of course, yeah.
I don't think it's a bad strategy to warn somebody that you're about to clean their clock. It's not legal books like DraftKings or FanDuel or whatever, but local bookies for sure. I mean, it can get a lot of the headaches out of the way right away. And like I said, when a guy tells you he's undefeated since, you know, Back to the Future came out in 1985, he's never lost, then it's like, okay, then let's see how much pain you want to take.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, when that text comes, you know, you can say, hey, I told you. I don't know if that is good for anything, but I'm sure that, you know, when the moment comes of you getting limited, or kicked out, it's like, it's got to count for something that you literally told them when you were opening the account up that you're going to win.
Right. I actually have a legendary voice text from the guy that told me that 1980, yeah. He hasn't lost since 1985. Maybe I'll put that in like one of these chronicles.
Oh,
because it's the greatest voice text you've ever heard. He was telling me he's cursed. He was telling me it was voodoo. He doesn't know how, he didn't know how. How did this guy have 279 yards through three quarters? He played the whole fourth quarter, and I don't know, he threw six passes in the fourth quarter, and he couldn't complete one more yard. He went like 0 for 6 in the fourth quarter. He needed like 1 yard, and this one specific player prop broke this guy's back, where he left me like a 2-minute voicemail about how it was fun for me. He didn't have fun. Whatever. But he paid it out, you know.
Good for him.
And I was up front. I told him I was going to beat him, and you know, it's just how it ended.
Honestly, shout out to the PPH books that, you know, realized they got the worst of it and pay out. We got to give them some props for sure.
The older they are, the other way. Yeah, usually the older the bookie, the more they pay. The younger the bookie, the less they pay. Yeah, because the older guys have typically been in business forever, and they're just more honorable. They've been through a lot of situations. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some scumbags out there that, you know, I got a decent sized stiff from a guy about a year ago. But typically, my experience, the older the bookie, the more honorable, the younger the bookie, the more likely it is to get into a situation where you're not going to get paid. Or that you're going to get into a dispute.
Because, you know, if their nature is just kind of like scummy or whatnot, when they're young, they'll often stiff, get a bad name, and just kind of spiral. So the people who last, you know, probably have some reason.
Or the young kids don't have money. That's it.
Like, that's also true, yeah.
22-year-old kid, like, running a book out of his dorm, you get that account through somebody, a middleman, and then, you know, you beat him for $10,000, and, you know, he probably had, you know, maybe he has $1,500 to his name or something like that, because it doesn't take anything to set up a PP. If you're going to set up a PPH operation, it's nothing to set up, but it's one thing to take the bets. It's another thing to have the capital to actually pay. And, you know, young kids don't have money, and they're usually worse at spending it too. So
that's,
there you go.
In my experience, it's true.
Yep.
When I was a young poker player. But yeah, another good reason for this is also for our bookie friends, our PPH friends, the same lessons of save your money, build your roll, rainy day fund for when a sharp comes in the door. This is episodes for everybody, you know, it's for both sides of the counter. I love that. Well, thank you again for this. It's been an absolute blast. Please, I'll link your Twitter in all the episodes. If you're not following at ChinaManiac on Twitter, you really need to. You know, these posts are amazing. So make sure you're following them so you know when they drop. And then, I'm really excited to touch base later and see how everything's going. It's been really fun.
Appreciate, same here. I appreciate you having me on. Great talk.